creative community. I'm Amanda Coulson. I'm the director of the National Art Gallery of the Bahamas, and you're listening to 96.9 Guardian Talk Radio. It's very nice to be back. I know I've been away for a couple of weeks, and in that time I had lots of people visiting the house, delivering flowers and bringing FedExes, and they all said they listened to the show. So I want to give a shout out to all the listeners. They all make fun of me and say, I always say no one's listening, but I know you are and I appreciate it. So don't forget as well that you can always go to our own website, www.nagb.org.bs, and you can listen to the archive shows if you missed the beginning or the end, or you just think it was so awesome you want to listen to it again. So tonight I'm really excited to have a friend in the studio who is also an international curator visiting the Bahamas, and his name is Trevor Schoonmaker. Good evening, Trevor, and welcome.
Good evening. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. So I've been trying to get Trevor to come down for a while, and finally I hooked him with a vacation time.
Beautiful.
And I thought it would be really nice for the audience to learn a little about Trevor's career, just so for those who are interested in the arts as a career and sort of what being a curator is. We talk about that sometimes on the show, all the kind of different aspects of the museum and the different things that go on behind the scenes. So Trevor, why don't you just first tell our audience a little about like how you got into art? Because in fact, just on this vacation, I learned that you started out studying marine biology or something.
I did. I did start in marine biology in college. Then I encountered chemistry, which I had been taking art history just for fun.
To meet the girls?
To meet the girls. Classrooms full of girls and me. So that worked out well. But I was just fortunate in that my parents had some level of interest and knowledge. Mm-hmm. So when we would travel a little bit, we would always go, if we go to any other city in the U.S. or abroad, we'd always go to the art museum. Mm-hmm. And so I just developed an interest, and I loved to draw as a kid. Mm-hmm. And that's just sort of built from there. But I think more so once I started studying some art history classes, I saw how art reflected life. Mm-hmm. And reflected history and how it's so interwoven with the everyday. Mm-hmm. Everything that we do is so visual. Mm-hmm. And how do you can have a visual imprint. And so it just sort of stuck with me. And then I had very close Nigerian friends growing up, and they moved home from North Carolina, where I grew up, back mm-hmm. to Nigeria, to Ife, and I went and lived with them for a summer, and then that got me very interested in the early 90s in African art, mm-hmm. specifically contemporary
African from the continent.
That's right.
Mm. And did that then lead? So that became your specialty. Did you study that in any formal way, or did you just become sort of an expert by looking at stuff?
I can't even say I'm an expert now, but I would say that I became very interested in part because no one was studying it. You couldn't. Mm-hmm. It was so early that like today, if you say you want to study contemporary African art or contemporary Caribbean art. Or contemporary, Chinese. There's all these levels of specialization.
Yeah.
But at that time,
and courses developed somewhere, not at every university,
right.
But yeah.
That's right. In the U.S. or in the U.K. or somewhere, someone's teaching it.
Mm-hmm.
But when I went, this was in college in '92. I went and studied and lived in Nigeria,
mm-hmm.
and then I looked for someone teaching this because I sort of fell in love with the culture more than the art.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just the culture and. No one was teaching it. So I had to study with a wonderful advisor who taught classical, traditional African art,
mm-hmm.
Nkwakapom, from Accra, Ghana, and at the University of Michigan. And then I worked with someone in contemporary art, and then I worked with an African film specialist, and I studied with an African-American art scholar, and then with a contemporary artist.
So you sort of pieced together your own education in a way.
I did, because there wasn't it wasn't formally laid out,
yeah.
But that appealed to me because I always I've always sort of run from what's popular,
mm-hmm.
and now it's very popular.
Well, that was going to be then my next question. How do you feel now with this? Is there a sense of satisfaction? Because again, now I mean, the Tate Modern has now, I think maybe 5 years ago or 4 years ago, put together a contemporary African purchasing committee, and one of our good friends is on that, Kenneth
yes.
Montague, who's another person that became an expert just by
That's
doing
right.
kind of thing.
That's right.
And then now there's the 154 Contemporary African Art Fair, which does involve a lot of Caribbean artists too, and you know, we've got artists like Arun Tabar Strawn with the Biennale Pavilion and
yeah.
Lavar, and there's suddenly it's kind of hot. It's sort of hot to be from the Caribbean. How do you feel about that? Is it something gratifying now?
It's immensely gratifying because that's what it needs to be. You need to change the modify the mainstream in
mm-hmm.
some way, or to,
mm-hmm.
you know, change the field so
mm-hmm.
that all an artist from anywhere in the world is seen as a viable artist. So
yeah.
The fact that Africa is now and the Caribbean and artists of color worldwide, Latin America, are being written into the history of the contemporary moment in art.
But do you think we've really... I mean, my feeling is we're still at a phase where it's kind of exoticized. Like, we're not sort of normalized yet. So you still... And a lot of artists from here have that sort of problem that they need to identify themselves as a Bahamian artist or as a Caribbean artist in order to have someone be interested in them. Whereas if you're German, you're not like, oh, I'm a German artist. You're just an artist.
Right. Show me the what's German about your work.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Exactly.
What's authentically German.
So, do you find that still the case too?
Well, I think it goes hand in hand. I think in the broader population, there's the looking for the exotic, I think is inherently there. It's still a big part of it. But I think as you get more into people working in contemporary, there's so many young curators and young artists now interested in not, you know, it used to be that you studied art history, you studied old white guys. It's all white men.
Yeah, and, now and occasionally they drag out Vijay LeBrun as being like, oh, there was one white lady too.
Right, so now it's way more women.
Yeah.
Way more artists of color from and much more international, much more global. And of course, some of that, you know, on the popular level, like there's the what's hot at the moment. But I think, it's really taking root in a serious way because there's so many young scholars, so many young curators, art historians, young artists who are pushing it and doing great work.
Yeah, which is so good to hear because, I always find when I now leave home and I go up to visit an art fair in New York or whatever, it takes me a couple of days to get used to the fact that there are so few people of color in the visitors.
That's right.
And I mean, not most of the visitors, because in New York you get a very diverse population, but in the dealers. So it's nice to hear that institutionally you feel like there's a lot of curators and a lot of artists that are coming up. So hopefully that's going to change somewhat.
Oh, yeah. It's changing rapidly. Yeah, I mean, it used to be that, you could count on one hand the curators of color who were working and had some level of recognition, but now there's so many young ones coming through that are brilliant and doing great work and inspiring. So.
Has there been if you don't want to answer this question, that's fine. Has there been any, have you had moments where it's been hard for you because you, like me, are Caucasian? Because, certainly when I first got this job, a few people in the States were like, why is that white lady taking that job? And so has that been something that's been a struggle for you?
It certainly comes. It always comes up because someone, my thing is I never try to speak for anyone. So I've, I did a large show about Fela Kuti, Afrobeat musician, and I never position myself as an expert on Fela or speaking for Nigerians or Africans, but more as a catalyst, as a way.
So finding the people that could talk for
that's
him.
That's right. Being a platform, providing that opportunity and bringing people together and letting their voices be heard. So being, playing that role, which I know you do so well here. So that's been really, understanding that the nature of your role is really important.
Sure, of course. Well, and the history. I think we talked about that sort of off air, just, being sensitive to the different histories wherever you might be, because I think that's also the interesting thing is that wherever you might go, you will be read a different way, irrespective of the color of your skin, whether you're black or white or another person of color, depending on that particular locale's history, and you have to be very sort of conscious of that.
That's right.
Of how am I being read in this context? So
completely. I mean, and I'm read even in the context of New York versus the southern United States read differently.
Yeah, of course. Well, sure, of course. Yeah. And you're in South Carolina.
North Carolina.
Yeah. I never get it
right. That's all
right. I know. I'm like, and now, is that where you're from?
I was born and raised in North Carolina, and I was gone for 12 years and was able to come back because the Duke University built this museum that opened up, and they were looking for their first contemporary curator. And I thought, I'll just inquire.
Yeah.
And it just sort of everything fell into place magically. And to be there at the time when a museum was... I didn't think this would be possible because there wasn't a strong contemporary art scene in North Carolina, but now there is.
Yeah, now there is. Yeah. And have you been a major... I guess you have been a major part of that.
I've gotten to play a role, and it's been exciting. Yeah.
Well, that's interesting. It's a bit like me, actually, because I never thought I'd move home. And then I heard the museum opened. I was like, oh, the National Art Gallery. That sounds interesting. And I sort of followed it for a bit. And then, 10 years later, someone called up and said, hey. And it's extremely gratifying to go back where you're from and be part of building something.
Immensely gratifying.
Yeah. And so we're going to go to a quick break, but I'd love to hear more then also about how you then got involved with Prospect New Orleans. So a lot of our listeners might not know what that is. So we'll talk a little bit about the birth of that, which is this very large art show that takes place in New Orleans, which Trevor is the curator of this year. Does it now happen every two, every 3 years?
Every three.
Officially. Started as a biennale, became a triennale.
That's right.
So we're talking to Trevor Schoonmaker, who is the chief curator at the, I didn't even do my homework before I came, the chief curator of the Nasher Museum, which is at Duke University. He's here visiting us, not only on vacation, but doing studio visits and visiting various of our art spaces, and we're really pleased to have him. And after this short break, we're going to come back and talk more about what we've seen. You're listening to The Blank Canvas, the show in which we speak about visual culture and creative community. I'm Amanda Coulson. I'm the director of the National Art Gallery of the Bahamas, and you're listening to 96.9 Guardian Talk Radio. We're going to be right back after this break. Welcome back to The Blank Canvas, the show in which we speak about visual culture and creative community. I'm Amanda Coulson. I'm the director of the National Art Gallery of the Bahamas, and you're listening to 96.9 Guardian Talk Radio. Now, don't forget that when you're traveling, you can also live stream us. You go to www.guardiantalkradio.com. You click on the live stream button, and you can hear the show while you are away through your computer. You can also download the TuneIn app to your mobile device, going to the app or the Play Store. Get TuneIn, and then you find Guardian Talk Radio, and you can just carry us around with you wherever you are. So you can always listen to The Blank Canvas. So tonight, I'm very excited to have a friend and colleague in the studio, Trevor Schoonmaker, who is the chief curator of the Nasher Museum at Duke University in North Carolina. I have to remember that. I'm going to write it down so I don't make a mistake again. And we've been speaking a little bit about how he got into curating. And now I'd like to move on to a little bit about your big project that's upcoming, which is Prospect New Orleans. So can you? And we actually had a Bahamian artist in Prospect 3 years ago. And there is sort of a connection, New Orleans. So can you talk a little bit about, first of all, the birth of Prospect and what it is, and then what your role is, and how you got involved? How did you land that gig?
Sure. Well, the birth of it is there was a curator named Dan Cameron who founded it in 2008. And it was founded in the wake of Katrina, Hurricane Katrina, in a way that the city was thinking how to re-energize itself, and the art community had the same thought. So how do we play a role in the rejuvenation and the rebirth of New Orleans post this incredible disaster? So Dan Cameron had been spending a lot of time there, and he was a curator at the New Museum of Contemporary Art in New York. And he thought, well, maybe a triennial actually brings in art tourism. Mm-hmm. So it's a way to infuse the city with people from outside to see the beauty of the city. This incredible, New Orleans is such a cultural crossroads.
Mm-hmm. Very much so.
Unlike any other place. Yeah. Where it's in North America, it's we call it sometimes the northernmost Caribbean city.
Mm-hmm.
Or, because it's north of Miami.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it's also the most African city, it's the most European city, and it's just this.
Well, and it really, in the same way the Caribbean does, it kind of there's this blend of European and African-ness in cuisine, in art, and all those things in this really interesting way.
That's right, which you can find interspersed throughout the southeastern United States, because there's some similar histories.
Mm-hmm.
But New Orleans on another level. So Dan thought, well, this is a perfect place for one of these triennials to bring the international art world to New Orleans.
Well, and that in itself is something I'd love the Bahamian audience to think about, because, again, we're constantly here trying to think about, how do we diversify our economy? We are obviously very much stuck in this tourism model, and nothing against tourism, but how can we make it more interesting? And I think this is one of the ways we can. And so it's great to look at a model like Prospect New Orleans or a city like New Orleans that decided that art and culture was going to be how they rebranded. And I think that's something we should really consider. So anyone out there listening who's, got a big job in the government, think about that. And not just Junkanoo Carnival, but other things too.
Well, I mean, New Orleans is such an interesting parallel because Mardi Gras, dominates everything.
There's of course,
such a festival-driven city.
Mm-hmm.
There's a music festival, such a musical city.
Mm-hmm.
Musical festival every month. But Mardi Gras dominates. And so their carnival season, everything builds up to it, much like Junkanoo, right?
Mm-hmm.
So to get people to focus on the visual arts outside of carnival, it took some time.
Mm-hmm.
But Prospect has been a catalyst for the arts community has grown immensely, and there's more people going there. So it's brought attention to artists living and working in New Orleans, Prospect, bringing international.
Of course, because then they see local artists and they spread the word when they leave.
And we make a real effort to include local artists in every, even though it's an international, global triennial with artists from all over the world to make sure there are New Orleanian, Louisiana regional.
Well, and again, I think that's another thing we have to learn a lesson from, because as a small nation, we're extremely protectionist sometimes. And, you know, there's a fear of bringing in foreigners to do things, whether it's musicians or other artists. And, like, why do we need them? Because we've got the best here, which we do. But, of course, sometimes it really helps to have a big brand name come in, and then you get all this attention. And then people are like, oh, I'm going to go look at that. And while I'm there, I'll look at all the local stuff too.
Yeah.
So you have to kind of find how do you find a balance between that? Do you find sometimes, like, bigger names maybe get too much attention and that's hard for the locals?
No, but I think maybe what's a similar parallel between Nassau and New Orleans is that New Orleanians are so invested in their own culture,
mm-hmm.
and so in love with their own culture for justifiable reasons,
mm-hmm.
because it's so special and unique, that their own culture will never be overshadowed. Mm-hmm. So to bring in a big name artist from somewhere else in the world, it just brings the rest of the world to pay attention to the New Orleanian culture,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and then they both learn from one another and they both
mm-hmm.
profit,
mm-hmm.
and it's not so different than any small city. You know, even where I am in Durham, North Carolina. So when the National Museum opened, all the local artists thought, well, what is it going to do for me?
For us, yeah.
For us, mm-hmm. yeah. How is? But what's happened is because there's this catalyst, there's this mm-hmm. Museum that has brought in internationally acclaimed artists over and over, it has provided an anchor for the arts community. It doesn't mm-hmm. mean it can be a grassroots thing because it's too much of an institution.
Right.
But it has provided the groundwork, the foundation. So probably 10 different artist-run spaces have popped up since the National Museum was established. And so just providing that foundation has been...
It's a little bit like also the big fairs, right? Like Art Basel, and then all the satellites or whatever.
Yeah, absolutely.
That it allows for other things to happen.
Yeah.
And actually, what's your relationship? Well, I'll ask that later because I want to go back to Prospect. So how did you get the gig?
I got the gig. I got a phone call.
Mm-hmm.
and they offered me the gig, but the way it happened is they had a committee and they sorted through 50 or 60 different names of curators from around the country and around the world who'd been, you know, and they discussed them and debated, and they decided on me in part because of the work that I'd done
mm-hmm.
in the past, and the way that with a young triennial in New Orleans, it has to really engage the community and not
mm-hmm.
just be this standalone thing for the art world. It has
right.
to be about New Orleans and living.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Prospect is for the listeners, Prospect is not something that just takes place in a museum. So there's no institution for Prospect. There's no
mm-hmm.
space.
Mm-hmm.
So we collaborate all around the city with the three major museums,
mm-hmm.
with smaller artist-run spaces, and then with unconventional spaces, just like a vacant lot to do an installation, or a building that isn't being used mm-hmm. to do something there, or a performance in this site. So there are actually 20 different sites, so it's really integrated into the city.
So the person visiting will then also kind of have a journey through the city, experiencing all these different districts and
right.
locations.
So the engagement with the local audience as much as the international audience is the key, and because probably, I assume, no one really explained to me exactly why I was offered, but I assume because going to Durham, North Carolina, which was not a hotbed of contemporary
mm-hmm.
art when I moved there, and now has a great reputation
yeah.
To be able to found something and to understand not being in what's seen as the center of the art world, like in New York or
mm-hmm.
London or somewhere
mm-hmm.
like that, but to make New York and London pay attention to what you're doing
mm-hmm.
and to have a real commitment to the local community
mm-hmm.
and to be able to, you know, balance the two.
Yeah, and hasn't also Prospect, I mean, I remember so another colleague of ours, Franklin Sermons, who
yes.
was in LA and is now at the Perez Museum, PAM, in Miami. And I remember, so he was the curator 3 years ago, and he said that he really was thinking about Prospect in with its connection to the Caribbean, and as
that's
you said,
right.
like New Orleans as being sort of the northernmost Caribbean city.
That's right.
So I would imagine that's also a reason you were selected, is that you have a knowledge you know, that includes the diaspora.
That's right. Yeah, because I've done a lot of work in the diaspora,
mm-hmm.
The African diaspora. So that's definitely part of it. And part of that is just growing up in the American South
mm-hmm.
and being in a family that I was really engaged with the entire community
mm-hmm.
around us rather
mm-hmm.
than just our own family.
Mm-hmm.
And but yeah, I think, you know, New Orleans has a very large African-American population
mm-hmm.
and, you know, immigrant population, Haitian and
mm-hmm.
others. And So
again, very similar to the Bahamas.
Very similar. And so the other thing that's happening at the overlapping at the same time, it's the 300-year celebration of the founding of, well, at least the French version.
Wow, because actually Miami just had theirs as well. Yeah. And that's interesting. Yeah.
So it enables me to even rein in this idea of an international exhibition, mm-hmm. have it be more locally focused on the history of the city and the natural connections to the Caribbean, mm-hmm. to Latin America, to Africa and Europe, mm-hmm. and cast a little further afield to Asia and Middle East, but less so to actually rein it in. With, you know, looking at more artists in the Caribbean and Latin mm-hmm. America and Africa. Mm-hmm.
Now, how do you manage that huge job while you're also the chief curator of the National Museum?
Oh, poorly, I guess.
Is your board, like, giving you a certain amount of time off? And because obviously that's really, it's a huge job. And understandably, you'll have, you know, people on the ground in New Orleans assisting you and all the rest. But it's a massive job to be the curator of that.
Yeah, there's a great team in New Orleans, mm-hmm. at Prospect, for starters. Mm-hmm. It's a very small team. Mm-hmm. It's a small organization. I mean, when I started, there were three people and me.
Wow.
And it builds as it goes. Yeah. So as more money is raised, then you bring in someone to manage the catalog and so on and so forth. So then public programs and education, mm-hmm. and as it builds. But yes, my director of our museum at the Nasher is very she's very supportive, and she also understands that by virtue of you just having said the Nasher Museum of Art four times in this interview, mm-hmm. that we get a lot of
press.
And it's a positive for a young museum that's only 11 years old to get that sort of thing. It's great for Duke University.
Yeah.
So she understands that. And that
where
so
our first director went.
That's right.
Yep, Eric
that's
James, right. Dr. James, so was at Duke for a while. There's a Duke connection. So there we have plenty of connections.
Yeah.
That we have to dig a little more, find some more. Do you feel that there's any kind of snobism, like when you say you're from North Carolina, you're from the South? Do you feel like that in certain instances, you know, that it's, because I feel sometimes there is a sort of not an understanding, but an assumption that nothing really great's made outside of certain places, and the work you do can't really be that serious because you're from X place or Y place, and obviously that's something we really suffer from in the Caribbean.
Yeah.
Do you find that in the States, being from North Carolina and working at a museum there?
Absolutely. There's a tremendous bias, definitely, particularly towards the American South,
mm-hmm.
but perhaps more than anywhere. But it's more just anything outside of New York, L.A., Chicago, mm-hmm. is seen as, you know, the hinterlands.
Mm-hmm.
And it's obviously not true. So mm-hmm. I actually just organized, but I did live in New York for 8 years and lived mm-hmm. and worked there. So mm-hmm. I was able to develop a network and a community. And
I was going to say you crafted connections
before I left, which has been a huge advantage mm-hmm. for then. So it would have been harder if I just had stayed in North Carolina trying to grow out of it.
Yeah, I mean, again, it's a very similar. Again, our museum's 13 years old. I haven't been there since the beginning like you have, but the same thing. Like it's easier when you've been out and you've forged your connections and you've been able to, create networks that then when you go back home you can tap into.
But it's essentially those are the conversations that I'm most interested in. Mm-hmm. So like those who are perceived to be marginalized,
mm-hmm.
or who within the greater power dynamics of the world, or particularly within the art mm-hmm. world, if the American South or the Caribbean are not getting mm-hmm. the attention they deserve, mm-hmm. well, let's bring more attention there. If mm-hmm. Africa is not getting the attention it deserves, mm-hmm. let's bring more attention. Mm-hmm. So co-curator Miranda Lash and I just did a big show about the American South mm-hmm. for that very reason.
Yeah.
Called Southern Accent. And it was actually illuminating because it was showing that the South has had a tremendous impact, not only on music and food in the U.S., but on visual culture and mm-hmm. art.
And was that just the Nasher, or is that traveling?
That's opening. It was at the Nasher, and it's now going to Speed.
Going
Museum
to Speed Museum, because I know she's at the Speed, right? Exactly. And will it continue from there?
I think it probably stops after that.
Yeah. And how many artists?
60.
And when you're doing a show like that, specifically, you know, in the Southern United States, are you consciously thinking about including X amount of women, including X amount of people of color? Is that something, you know, you really sat down and were like, okay, we don't want to do this unless we can have X, Y, Z?
Yeah, and we never set numbers, but mm-hmm. you want to dig deep enough to where you feel like you have a viable balance mm-hmm. that makes sense. You want to make sure you have good representation.
Mm-hmm.
And there probably were more artists of color mm-hmm. than white artists in the show.
Mm-hmm.
Slightly fewer women.
Mm-hmm.
But we really sought to have that balance because to show the real diversity, not just the the 10 artists that mm-hmm. have made it out and gotten already recognized. We really dug for those who haven't gotten a lot of attention.
Right, which is kind of what we have to do here. So for a while, when I traveled, I'd say, oh, I'm in the Bahamas. Oh, Tavares Strawn.
Yes.
And it was just the one name. And I used to always say, well, there's more where that came from. Right. That was my tagline. And now it's Tavares Strawn and LeVar Monroe, who I know you actually know That's very right. well. So you actually gave LeVar a show at the Nesher.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, I met LeVar because he had a residency at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, which is 9 miles down the road mm-hmm. from where I live. And mm-hmm. so I heard... I actually have been seeing emails of his work from his gallery in
mm-hmm.
London,
mm-hmm.
and I just caught my eye just via email.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, "Who is this guy? Well, it looks interesting." And then I realized he just started a residency in my state,
mm-hmm.
so I went to meet him, and we did a show of artists from the region, and included a lot of LeVar's work. And so now it looks like LeVar and I may be working again in a prospect. So.
Yeah, well, yay! Bahamas represent 242. So on that very positive note, we will go to another short break. So I'm very pleased to know there will be Bahamian representation this year. That's exciting. I'm planning to come with a group of
Wonderful.
Supporters of the museum, so we'll be there with our turquoise and yellow, waving our flags. So I am speaking to Trevor Schoonmaker, who is the chief curator of the Nasher Museum at Duke University in Durham, North Carolina. He's speaking about his experience... a lot of his experiences, how he got there, his travels in Africa, and his work at the Nasher, but specifically also at Prospect New Orleans, which is this very large triennale, which is an art show every 3 years that happens in New Orleans. And we're going to hear more about that when we come back. You're listening to The Blank Canvas, the show in which we speak about visual culture and creative community. I'm Amanda Coulson. I'm the director of the National Art Gallery, and you're listening to 96.9 Guardian Talk Radio. We're going to be right back after this break. Okay, now when's this airing? I have to look at my phone. Do you want to get a cup of water before we do the third segment? I can get one for you.
If we can. Yeah,
yeah, no, of course.
That'd be great.
Yeah.
Thank you.
That. Okay.
Is that Southern Accent and?
When does Southern Accent open?
I think it's April 29th. I'll look it up, but that's close enough. I'm sure I can look it up real fast.
So you should definitely look up Aldi. I'll email you his name because he's at the KMAC, which is a much smaller museum than the Fee, obviously. But he's doing good work there. And because it was an arts and crafts museum, basically. But also dealt with art, and he's really trying to kind of, like, he did a show with a bunch of artists from here, too. Thank you so much.
Did y'all finish the segment?
We finished the segment, yes, we did.
So we're on the third segment.
We're on the third segment now. The first one was a little short of time, and the second one was a little long of time, but I'm still on my half hour. So.
All right.
Okay?
Thank you.
29? Should I look it up?
I think it's the 30th. April 30th.
Okay.
And it runs until October 15th, I believe.
And that's Louisville, so don't take United.
I'll take United.
Okie dokie. All right, I am ready when you are.
I'm ready. I'm good.
Normally you can't hear the music outside. I don't know why it's so loud today.
That's fine. It's not distracting at all.
I'm just going to find my timer again. Sorry. Okay, where am I? There I am. I think he's doing something. He looks busy. Okay?
I'm good.
Good.
You make this really easy.
I know sometimes people are really nervous, and I'm like, listen, just imagine we're in a coffee shop.
No, this is...
And we're just having a chat.
This is super easy.
Yeah. That's not my jingle.
Not yet.
Oh, just keep going? No jingle? Okay. I was waiting for you to do the... All right. Then we'll just go. And welcome back to The Blank Canvas, the show in which we speak about visual culture and creative community. I'm Amanda Coulson. I'm the director of the National Art Gallery of the Bahamas, and you're listening to 96.9 Guardian Talk Radio. Now, we just opened a couple of shows recently, so I just need to do some housekeeping. You need to come, please, and see The Unseen Structure, which is a really beautiful show curated by John Cox about his father's practice. His father, George Cox, was the first black civil engineer in the Bahamas, and it's a conversation between father and son about engineering, but also about construction and contemporary art, and the stories that... that we don't really know, the uncovered stories. There's also a show called Love, Life, and Loss by Thierry Lamar, which is a series of his watercolors, an extraordinarily beautiful show. Thierry has lived in the Bahamas for 35 years and spends a lot of time on the Out Islands, and this is a series of works that we've taken out of private collections that cover the last 20 years of his practice. And everyone needs to remember that the National Art Gallery of the Bahamas is always free on Sundays. So there's no reason not to come the rest of the week, Tuesday to Saturday. There is a fee, but Sundays you can come with grandma and auntie and all your kids and have a picnic on the lawn, so long as you clean up afterwards. And you can see a lot of awesome Bahamian art. And then, of course, on the ground floor, we have the permanent collection. So come do that. And then if you're traveling out in the world, you could go see the show that my guest, Trevor Schoonmaker, curated, co-curated with Miranda Lash from the Speed Museum. Trevor is visiting us from North Carolina, from the Nasher Museum at Duke University. He recently co-curated a show called Southern Accent, which is opening in Louisville, Kentucky on April 30th. Don't fly United, because we all know what happens on flights to Louisville on United. But if you happen to be traveling this spring or summer, around the States, and you happen to be in Louisville, then go see that show. So, Trevor, back to you. So, how did you actually then reach out to Miranda on that? Because that's interesting. Did the two institutions collaborate on that show?
It was curator to curator. I met Miranda when she was the curator at the New Orleans Museum of Art.
Mm-hmm.
And I was down there talking to Dan Cameron about Prospect before Franklin Sermons was hired.
Mm-hmm.
And I met Miranda, and she's from Los Angeles. And her first job was in Houston at the Manil, and then her second was in New Orleans. And so she was thinking of herself being placed in the South, working in the South, and what it means and how it reads so differently, and how it's the focus on it is so different. And so she actually reached out to me after we'd met there and said, you know, would you want to do this with me? And I said, you know, I'd love to. I'd recently moved home to North Carolina, and I've been thinking about it, having been away for 12 years.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, that's sort of how it came about. And then we pitched it. Now, of course, then she was hired by the Speed Museum. So then it didn't open the New Orleans Museum of Art. It traveled with the curator to the Speed.
Mm-hmm.
And then we did jointly produce it, the two institutions.
Mm-hmm. That's great. And, I mean, that's down here, it's sort of almost unthinkable because, of course, we're the only institution.
Right.
So, to think about like how I'd co-curated a show, although we have tried to collaborate. The National Gallery of Cayman Islands participated with us on the En Masse show, which also started in New Orleans.
Right.
And that was actually a great experience because it's really nice to, and especially here because we're so sort of alienated from other professionals in our field, find someone that you collaborate with on a big project like that is so great because it's not just you. Have another institution, another team, and another person on your level that you can like share your sorrows and worries with that understands your position, because also in the institution you're the only one in your position.
That's right. Exactly. You're on an island, and when I was first hired, I was really an island because our staff was much smaller, and so I was the contemporary department. Everything contemporary is like, well, Trevor, what are we doing? So working with Miranda was great because whenever you collaborate, it creates more work because you have to vet everything, or if you want to make a decision, you need the input of your partner who's in another state or another city or another country or wherever, and so that delays things. It creates more work, but in the end, it makes everything stronger because they have two sets of eyes, two different perspectives, and if you work well together, everything is just that much tighter and much more thought through.
So this is actually not your first time in the Bahamas. So you came down, what you said, in 2010, so 7 years ago.
Yeah.
We only had one day, so you can't speak, deeply, but do you see development? Do you see changes? Are you looking at things? You're like, oh, I'm going to have to come back and check that out. Or do you feel like, we need to work harder?
Well, I mean, we all need to work harder.
Yeah, no, we all need to work harder.
So that's not specific to here.
Yeah,
but no, it's fascinating. It's been great. And, you know, when I came in 2010, I saw more collections probably. Mm-hmm. I met with John Cox at Pop-Up, but I didn't get to do as many artist studio visits like I've done this time, which has been wonderful.
Yeah.
So that has been really rewarding.
Great.
And to, like you said, you know, everybody knows Tavares and Tavar, but there's so much more happening here. And it's clear that there's much more we could do had I another 2 days.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, now that I've, this is always the plan, you know, I get my hooks into you.
Right.
And then I get you back for another 2 days.
That's right.
That's how it works.
That's beautiful. That's the way to do it.
And do you see, after all your work for Prospect, sort of, because, you know, sometimes I find unexpected similarities in places. Like, for example, we were trying to do a Biennale Pavilion a few years ago with John Beadle, who you did meet. And I'd really just thought, oh, yeah, I want to do a pavilion in Venice because it's awesome. And I think John Beadle's awesome. And that's kind of as deep as I got. But then when I went there with him, I suddenly started seeing all these kind of connections, not only through processes that take place in Venice and here, but also through the city's relationship to tourism. And the environment, like the cruise ships coming in and they're dredging their harbor. Yeah. And we have all those problems, too. And it's something that had never occurred to me that we would have a sense of kinship with Italy. Being here, I mean, even in your few days, are you picking up on anything that of work you've seen elsewhere, say in New Orleans, that you're like, oh, wow, you know, I hadn't thought of that before?
Oh, definitely. I mean, because New Orleans has such... it's more historical. It's not as like as recent waves of immigration, but the Caribbean influence in New Orleans is very strong and palpable. And so, the influence from Africa, whether it be in the architecture and the food and the music, and that you also feel and see here, that's just prevalent throughout everything you do, and even the pacing in the American South and in the Caribbean is quite similar.
Yeah.
So all of those things are there. So there's a certain synergy that just is and just exists. And there's a connection. But even looking at someone like LeVar and his and what he's doing now and making there's such easy connections to make through Carnival, through Junkanoo and Mardi Gras, and specifically the Mardi Gras Indians, African American social groups that are sort of like the underground version of what happens with the big parades. You know, they're in the working class communities and doing their own thing for their community rather than the big parades, which are for everyone. And
right. We it's a weird way we kind of have that. I mean, the Junkanoo is still very much about the community, but we also have these scrap groups, which are, you know, much more informal kind of groups of people. And it's always really interesting to go to the parade and, you know, you see the A groups and they're just so, you know, they've rehearsed and they're so professional. And then sometimes, and they're awesome, but sometimes, you know, the scrap group looks like they're having more fun.
Yeah.
And that they're more connected even to the audience in a way because, you know, they're not so professionalized anymore. Well, I can't remember the names of those Indian groups. Do you remember them? Because we showed a documentary at the gallery,
there's
Les Blank documentary.
They call themselves gangs or tribes, and there's a lot. So I'm working with someone in Yellow Pocahontas right now with his work, Big Chief of Yellow Pocahontas. Mm-hmm. There's Wild Chapatulas.
Chapatulas, those are the ones. Yeah, the ones.
Brilliant. Wild Chapatulas. They became quite well known because they're Big Chief. They produced an amazing album in the 70s. It was just incredible, called self-titled Wild Chapatulas eponymous album. But the music does bring in elements of Caribbean influence as well as, you know, blues and
Well, when I saw, I didn't program the film program. We work with a film programmer called Francis Litzinger, who's actually Canadian. But he scheduled that during the En Mesh show. So it was a documentary about, you know, about Carnival in New Orleans. But it was specifically about the Wild Chapatulas. And I couldn't believe it because I didn't know about them. And so, you know, for the listeners, these are African Americans that are making costumes that reflect Native American culture. And they're celebrating that the Native Americans kind of stood up to the white man. And it's a kind of a reverence and a you know, it's done in a very reverent way. Because my daughter would, of course, be like, oh, cultural appropriation. But it's really, like, very beautiful. And amazing to watch this dedication to the craft because it was so similar to Junkanoo.
Yeah.
And the way they talked about the groups, because, you know, they're called Junkanoo groups too, and just, you know, the saving up for all the feathers and the bits and pieces and the dedication to those costumes that just kind of come out for one day. It's incredible.
You see visual parallels with Junkanoo and Trinidadian Carnival and all across the Caribbean and even to Brazil. But also, I think just the, like you said, this level of resistance in the
yeah, exactly.
Resistance to the, you know, a level of oppression or mm-hmm. racism in the mm-hmm. United States. And but it's done in a way that's about empowerment, self-empowerment.
Exactly. Self-empowerment and even kind of joy, right?
Joy,
it's a
yeah.
celebration.
Which New Orleans yeah. does very well.
Yeah. I'm sure. I'm going to have to come. I've never been to Mardi Gras.
I went for the first time this year, and it's amazing. And but I did spend a whole day tracking down the Mardi Gras Indians because they're very elusive. They don't mm-hmm. have us. There's no carnival route that you can follow.
Okay.
So you have to sort of find them. So I started early in the morning, and then the one big chief I was waiting on, who I'm going to be working with, showed up at sundown. So we spent the whole day. But it was wonderful because it's not something that even most New Orleanians mm-hmm. experience. Mm-hmm. But their costumes, their way, because there is a historical connection between African Americans and Native Americans.
Mm-hmm.
And so there, yes, it is cultural appropriation, but it's really, like you're saying, being reverent
mm-hmm.
to those connections and those historical roots and how they both were, you know, both had levels of resistance in their communities
mm-hmm.
and sort of standing up for themselves. And so, but it's beautiful, like the pageantry of it.
Yeah, I know.
And it's like which big chief is prettiest? So I saw two come together. It's sort of like, it's almost like the...
Well, it's like bragging rights, in a way.
Bragging rights. It's
yeah.
like hip-hop battles of the 80s, you know, where they became...
That's a really good way to describe it, because I try to tell people about the birth of Junkanoo, which also started in the same way. Like, when it first really started, it was, you know, coming from a different part of town. And, you know, you don't want to say it was like gang fights, because it wasn't, because it was more about, you know, like exactly like a rap battle or something.
Yeah.
So it's a battle, but not a violent battle.
Yeah, well, early on, they did fight.
Oh, they did?
Yeah,
really? Yeah. Well, I think probably did a little bit here,
and
too.
Even,
but
and even, yeah, with hip-hop groups,
yeah.
and, you know, because they came out of gangs
yeah,
in New York.
Sure.
And
the odd
so
murder, but...
Yeah, there was violence, but
yeah.
it's evolved
yeah.
into
yeah.
something that's really artistic and
yeah.
beautiful.
Yeah,
and
that's actually a great analogy. And are you working on them for a future show? Is that something you can talk to us about?
I'm working with someone for Prospect also.
For Prospect,
yeah,
okay.
To bring in
yeah.
this art form, much like Junkanoo, that's
yeah.
not always looked at in the art world
as an art form. Yeah.
But is just as vibrant, just as amazing. And
well, and I think also sometimes it's not even that the art world doesn't look at it like an art form. I think sometimes the artists themselves don't consider themselves artists.
That's right.
So I meet a lot of guys in the shacks that, you know, are the most incredible draftsmen or incredible engineers. And, you know, many, you know, some do consider themselves artists and are engaging with the institution. But again, there's many that just... are like, well, I do this because I love it and I'm passionate about it, and you know, I do it after work and I'm really committed, but I'm actually a banker, or I'm actually
yes.
a plumber, or I'm actually something else. I'm not an artist. And I think that's also kind of an interesting switch in the brain. It's like when someone then self-identifies to say, well, I'm an artist.
Yeah, a lot of it is about self-identification.
Mm.
But then you're right, it's also just the public recognizing.
And how in New Orleans, do the public see people like that as artists, or how do they perceive?
Just starting to change.
Yeah,
I think they've loved the art form,
mm-hmm.
but they've seen it as more of a cultural phenomenon,
right?
Rather than, you know, art is something that is in the white walls of a museum or a gallery. But
mm-hmm.
I think, as you know, you and I have talked about it, art is all around us,
mm-hmm.
and art is part of life. And I've always tried to curate exhibitions that either bring art outside of the museum or engage life in a way that makes it accessible
mm-hmm.
and make people understand that it's not something for the elite. It's something, in fact, these artists don't come from elite backgrounds.
Rarely, in fact,
yeah.
Yeah, yeah, rarely. And I think, you know, all these kind of processional festivals and things are such a crucial part to the development
Absolutely.
As well. And I think many times people don't recognize it as an art form because the audience very often only sees the party side.
Yeah.
So they see
yeah.
the celebration, they see everyone drinking a lot,
sure.
and so they don't take it seriously in that way. But, you know, if you take, I mean, we had this discussion with John Beadle, if you then look behind, you know, the work that goes into that moment, you know, that's 6 months, that's 8 months, that's a year
yeah.
of, you know, costume design, theater design,
right.
you know, all this stuff. And that's, people don't see that. So I think that's always kind of interesting
yeah.
when you can bring that to the audience.
Time, labor, and creativity. I mean, the creative investment, like the thought that has to go into it. And that in the end, art is about ideas.
Mm-hmm.
The skill to draw, or the skill to craft, those are important skills. It's almost like being a singer, you know, in a band. Like, but what separates you as a musician is your ideas, like
mm-hmm.
your innovative You know, you could be the most skilled guitarist, but if you just noodle on your guitar, no one's really.
Or you just do cover songs.
Yeah, you just do cover songs.
Yeah.
So it's really not that different, but recognizing the skill has to meet the idea, mm-hmm. and the idea really drives it.
Yeah, that's true. I think, you know what, that's probably a good place to end.
Okay.
The idea drives it. So, you know, we talk that a lot on the show, and I'm very grateful again to my listeners because, you know, we hit certain themes and I go off on my soapbox. And, you know, ideas are important, and community. So for those listening who just tuned in late, you've been listening to Trevor Schoonmaker. Trevor is the chief curator of the National Museum at Duke University in Durham, North Carolina. He has been down with us for a few days, ostensibly on vacation, but, you know, we went to see some studios and we're very grateful. We're going to get you back.
I would love to come
for
back.
Sure. Now that you said 2 days, it's on the air. I have witnesses.
I'll be back.
And he's just curated a show that will be at the Speed Museum in Louisville, Kentucky, opening on April 30th, called Southern Accent. So if any of you, I know many of us travel in holidays or we go to do our shopping in the States and very often in the South. So if anyone is in Louisville, go see that show because it'll be really interesting. And if you're local, of course, come to the National Art Gallery of the Bahamas. We have two awesome shows that just opened, The Unseen Structure. I'm not drunk. It's 8 o'clock in the morning, but I am not speaking properly because, as many of you know, I've been off for a few weeks, but I'm back still garbling. So anyhow, The Unseen Structure, George Cox, the first black civil engineer. The show is curated by his son, John Cox, who many of you know as our former chief curator and one of our outstanding contemporary artists. It's a really beautiful show, which is a conversation between father and son about the sort of unseen work of the civil engineer and how John reads that through his artistic practice. And we also have the show Love, Life, Loss by Thierry Lamar, which is a suite of watercolors that cover 20 years of his practice. And that's all on the upper floors. And on the ground floor, we have a rehanging of the permanent collection. So even if you think you've seen the permanent collection, you haven't, because it's a new rehanging and a new show, which is called Revisiting Eye for the Tropics. And that's curated by our assistant curators, Natalie Willis and Ricardo Barrett. So there's lots to see at the National Art Gallery of the Bahamas. We are free on Sundays, people, so no reason not to come. And we are actually starting the sculpture garden, so plenty of outdoor space for your young ones to run around when they get bored of being dragged around the art. And please go to our website, www.nagb.org.bs, and look at our calendar, because we do have our monthly film program, we have talks, we have workshops. Many of those are free for the public. So go to our calendar, check out what's upcoming, and please just engage with your visual and creative community. You've been listening to The Blank Canvas. I'm Amanda Coulson, the director of the National Art Gallery. You've been listening to 96.9 Guardian Talk Radio, and we thank you for listening. Good night and have a good evening. He'll do all the rest afterwards.
Great.
We're done. Thank you.
Wonderful. Yeah, that was fun.
Thanks a lot. So I will email you when it's going to air.
Yeah, please.
It's May 3rd. Because then you can do a link and live stream it.
Absolutely.
And let's go. Hope the kids are having fun and not bored. We have to go take a picture. Sorry, that's one thing
let's
we have to
do.
We have to stand in front of the 96.9 sign.
Oh, yeah.
Which is in the studio. It's taped in a different studio. GP.